The single most important thing you can do today is to create and deliver a better experience for your customers. Learn how sales, marketing, and customer success experts create internal alignment, achieve desired outcomes, and exceed customer expectations in a personal and human way. This is the Customer Experience Podcast. Here's your host, Ethan Butte.
In a scaled-up business, we're looking for ways to create and maintain a relational experience. And in a more intimate relational business, we're looking for ways to scale our reach and our impact. Traditional outbound prospecting tends to create noise and pollution, and even inbound marketing's seeing diminishing returns. In this conversation, we'll explore a bit of a middle way here, a better way for any of us to connect with, engage, and educate people in a relational way rather than a transactional way. Our guest was the founding CMO at Gainsight and served as CMO at Front and Hopin. Today, he's co-founder and CEO at Audience Plus, a team building software, content, and community to help every company become a media company. Anthony Canada, welcome to the Customer Experience Podcast.
Thanks so much for having me on, Ethan. Excited to be here.
Yeah, looking forward to this conversation. I hope that for people who aren't, I've been following what you all are doing for some time now, and we'll get into what's, you know, coming to market imminently as we get further into the conversation. But I think people who haven't been following this broader conversation and what you all are doing and advocating for around media companies probably perked up a little bit at that term. So we'll get into that well, but we'll start where we always start here, which is customer experience. When I say that to you, Anthony, what does it mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think what comes to mind for me is this idea of a feeling or emotion. And I think in business, we don't really tend to place a lot of value in feelings because we tend to say, hey, you know, it's just business, it's not personal or something to that end. And I don't think that's very true. And so the sort of my definition that I would volley from the marketing side, at least, which I appreciate isn't always kind of the folks at the driver's seat of customer experience. It's the feeling that a customer, that a prospect, a member of your audience, someone in your community, whatever, has with your brand. And how do you as a brand try to orchestrate that positive feeling, that positive emotive kind of experience with your brand at every touch point across the life cycle? I think we can do a lot on the business, but ultimately it's a very human kind of concept to feel and to have an emotional kind of connection with a brand. And so that's sort of what comes to mind for me as I think about customer experience.
Yeah, really good. And you just drew out the call for a middle way very specifically in the first response in a way. Where do you think, at the risk kind of asking the obvious or maybe asking too big a question, where do you think we lost our way here? Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like the language you're using is language that I'm hearing from more and more people, but it seems like it's refreshing or new in some way, when in fact, business has always been based in relationship at some level. Like, where did we lose our way? Why does this feel new again? Or why does it feel like a change in business culture to start acting in ways that are in accordance with the way people feel?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, a lot of the context I bring into this conversation is the B2B software world, which is imperfect. It's not, I think, you know, a perfect representation of the world at large. But in this specific industry, as the digitization of marketing started to happen, the term that we started talking about was marketing automation. We're going to automate marketing. And we did that principally by sending a lot of emails to people. And the early adopters from that journey did pretty well because, like, gosh, this is a much cheaper and easier way to scale, you know, our ability to get our message delivered into prime real estate for our target audience, their inbox. And so we started sending emails and emails, and over time, more people, you know, took on that tactic within their marketing mix. And over time, our inbox just got inundated with marketing messages. And for me, on my personal email, Gmail organizes this like promotions and social. I don't know if you see that. It's like unbelievable how many things I've somehow found my way on a list for and now just get basically spammed from them into a box that I never look at. And so I'd say the explosion of marketing automation was probably the first bit. Second then was as social media came around, we started thinking about paid advertising through social channels. And so we started, you know, basically creating kind of thinly veiled marketing attempts, marketing campaigns to get people to either opt in and give us their email address or something to that end. Again, a very transactional kind of motion, not based on any real relationship. And so if I were to summarize, I think, and again, not being kind of a too much of a historian on the industry or anything, but the birth of the internet and the e-commerce and the sort of the digital kind of commerce landscape caused us to forsake a little bit of the relationship part of marketing and try to automate it, digitize it, scale it, do more with less. And we've gotten tired. We've gotten burned out on both sides. On the consumer side, we're so tired of being marketed to in a transactional way. And as marketers, we're tired with sort of the diminishing effects of some of these campaigns that are not getting any cheaper and certainly aren't bearing as much fruit as they did, you know, years ago.
Love it. We're going to double back into customer experience. And I first want to offer a microcosm just in reaction to what you just shared. Sure. There was like, you know, because we do email marketing here at BombBomb and video email messaging and video email marketing, which you can send to lots of different people. I'll never forget that window where Gmail introduced the tabbed inbox, and all anyone wanted to talk about was how do I, you know, kind of essentially hack my way out of the promotions tab. I'm like, well, you just sent this message to 1,873 people. What are you hoping for or expecting here? Like almost by definition, it's a promotion. And so like, it's not, you know, how can I approach this in a way that people will want me in their primary inbox and really seek me out the next time? And if I stop emailing them, they'll wonder where I went, right? Yeah. Like, that's the best of the best is like, hey, you used to send this like every other week and I miss it now. Like that's when you know you're doing it right. But the average reaction is, why am I not getting what I want out of this?
Yeah. And to be clear, by the way, I think it's a really important point. Companies like BombBomb have given us a human lens to communication. So when we're producing video content, we're able to actually connect with folks on a much more relational way at scale, sort of using technology to scale relationship versus sort of the, I think, incumbent, I think of just kind of the, you know, the Marketos and some of these other products that have been so just like blindly email the same message, let's say to 1,800 people to your point or something to that end. And by the way, Audience Plus is a big believer in email as well. It's a great channel to actually connect with people. But I think the bar is a lot higher now to actually make it and stay in the inbox. And you need video, editorial, relational type things in order to actually produce value. So that's where I think the disconnect was from like the old generation versus the new.
Yeah, very good. Again, just doubling back on customer experience before we move forward into a variety of things based on the problem scenario that you laid out there of people being tired on both sides of the relationship that is both physically and increasingly digitally distant. Customer experience, like I would acknowledge that you are, I don't know if you'd call yourself this, but I call you like a student of brand.
Yeah, I think so.
And so in your mind, what is the relationship between brand and customer experience? Because some of the language that you used around CX, specifically feeling, I associate with brand as well. Like, are they different to you? If so, how and how meaningful is that difference?
Yeah. And I think some of this I draw on from the Gainsight experience too, where we were building customer success, which was different, but had some overlapping components with customer experience. And the way we thought about that overlap at Gainsight, at least, was one of two things. One, customer experience had this sort of voice of the customer component to it, right? So it was surveys, it was NPS. It was sort of that kind of part of the overall slice. But then we also saw CX reporting into marketing in some cases. A lot of traditional organizations too, outside of B2B software, you know, had the sort of like, almost like a marketer looking after the entire life cycle of the customer from the moment they first hear about us, you know, somewhere online or whatever to their, you know, third renewal and the expansion motion over time and referral and all the things that come in between. So my sort of, in thinking about it as a life cycle, I think brand is not necessarily a bullet on the journey of the life cycle. It's almost like a filter that sits on top of the whole thing, right? Where people have to believe, have to understand kind of what you stand for as an organization, you know, missionally, who are your leaders and kind of are they committed to solving these problems and in what ways, you know, how do we show up in our communities? How do we show up to our customers? Through our content programs and our events and our experiences, how are we educating the industry at large? Like all of these things are components of your brand. However, they're not just for the benefit of driving customer acquisition. They're at the benefit of supporting your existing customers and ensuring that they're making it through the journey not just with your product, but their own career journey or whatever it is that they're trying to do with your products and services. And I think for too long, we've said that's a product problem to solve, meaning like, okay, we'll build the features, we'll, you know, make sure that we're shipping the right, you know, whatever. And then now they're going to be able to solve those problems. I think our product has a massive part of that solution, but so does our content, so do our events, so do the communities that we help form, so do the, you know, the relationships that we develop with our CS team and our support team and everyone that's kind of touching the customer. So I think brand isn't this kind of corporate marketing thing that is until we've sort of, I think, made it into a B2B. It's everything. And I think expressed through different places and really from, you know, taking it from the lens of the customer is, I think, a very healthy and appropriate place to start.
Yeah, I love that distinction. I'm just going to say it back and hopefully I heard you correctly. I really like this idea of brand as the filter or the layer over top of all of it. And then we treat customer experience as a voice of customer informed, motivated, in a way co-created, you know, series of activities. It's the journey itself.
The journey.
Blended with that customer feedback and information and inspiration along the way, but that the brand sits over top of it and is the filter through which any team in the organization can do their work.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think maybe one specific distinction that makes it different would be our product is our what. Our channels, you know, that we engage the customer in could be our how. Brand is the why, but it's not this like linear thing. The why sort of permeates every bit of the types of products we build, the way we engage our customers. And so I think that's maybe, if anything, where it might be different. But I think it's very much, I think thinking about it through as a filter is a really powerful kind of visual construct.
Yeah, really good. I was going to ask you to go a little bit into, I guess I will anyway. For folks who aren't familiar, like I'm familiar with Gainsight, where, you know, I've read the book, I've read your book, which was separate but kind of related on category creation with customer success. For people who aren't familiar, before we go too much farther, and because you've already introduced it, it may be relevant. Talk a little bit about your experience at Gainsight, what you took from it, how it, like maybe even give a little bit of definition to customer success for people who aren't familiar with that language. It comes up often, and I've had VPs of customer success on the show. I just don't want to miss the opportunity here for context for folks. And, you know, anything that was happening in that era, and I know you've done, you served as CMO a couple of times since then, but as we're heading into the more of the audience plus media company relational experience conversation, maybe what from that period of your career carries forward today?
Yeah, totally. So rewind back to 2013, you know, we had, the state of the industry was still such that companies that were working in recurring revenue businesses, typically, so SaaS companies, subscription companies, when you would sit in on a board meeting or, you know, an executive meeting, there's a lot of conversation around pipeline, closing, you know, new business and kind of hitting their new business targets, and very little about retention. And what we had observed, you know, at that point was just fundamentally for the business model to even work, retention has to be a thing. It has to be prioritized. We need a team that's kind of focused on it. And we saw there was a little cottage industry called a role that existed called customer success managers. There must have been, you know, only a few hundred, and most of them worked in Salesforce at the time, who were tasked with basically mitigating churn within the customer base. And so what we really, you know, Gainsight takes no credit for inventing this industry, but what we saw is this was a group that no one was really paying attention to in a really meaningful way. And if we could just radically serve them with content and community and events and all these types of things, then maybe we can build a great software business, you know, along the way as we were sort of building an underlying platform for this. Effectively, the platform was an early warning system for churn at the time, but it since has blossomed into so much more. And that really was the sort of major learning is, you know, we had support that was a traditional role that was very much a reactive, like, hey, I have a problem, file a ticket now, you know, sort of help, you know, respond and fix my problem. We had experience, which we talked about, which is sort of this journey, this kind of, you know, multi-team kind of initiative, but there wasn't this sort of proactivity around the health context of a customer that sort of got ahead of a churn or an upsell or an expansion motion. And so that's really what we helped put language around with customer success and really champion and try to advance the interest of that role. So fast forward from 2013, it went from, again, only a few hundred folks on LinkedIn to one of the fastest growing jobs in the world, according to LinkedIn. This was back when I was there, at least 2019 or so. And you know, we ended up building a conference that had over 6,000 people in San Francisco, sister events with thousands of people in the UK and Australia. We had groups of customer success professionals that met. We were self-organized, and we kind of helped kind of manage them on a one-to-many basis. We did virtual events, content, podcasts, all of these different things. And almost none of it was about our product. All of it was about the profession of customer success, best practices. And I'll say even the stuff that we did produce, most of it wasn't us in front of the mic. It was conversations like this where we turned the mic to the customer and we had people, we were sort of the gathering place for discussion and connection around this idea of customer success. So what's true today is, you know, without us knowing it, what we had done was build like a media company around customer success. And again, it's not, we're borrowing some fun consumer language when we say that, but really it was, we used content that we produced in order to build an audience that we had a direct relationship with over email, right? So they were subscribers to our audience. And then through that, we nurtured them with more content. And over time, some of them raised their hands and said they wanted to, you know, evaluate the product. And they would go on and become prospects and customers. And so the interesting bit is when customers were acquired through that more relational channel versus like a paid ad or an outbound call, as you're mentioning in the opening, they renewed and they used the adoption of the product was really good. They referred more people. And if they left their current job, they would take us with them to the new job. And I think that sort of the renaissance of going back to the relational side of marketing was leading with value, leading with education and entertainment and inspiration. It wasn't just fun for marketers, but it was actually like good for business. And I think a lot of folks believe that today or are starting to, especially now in 2023, where marketing budgets are getting slashed and that really impacts a lot of paid media typically. But we're also, I think we're still in the early days of saying, all right, how can I really operationalize that and scale it? Because we were using about 74 tools, I think, to pull off the pulse at Gainsight. And so what we're trying to build now with Audience Plus is a modern sort of operating system for building an owned media strategy and scaling an owned media strategy with your business. How can you build an audience using content and media and events and experiences? How can you engage that audience to better understand how they want to be served with your content and what topics, what formats, you know, things of that nature? And then how can you monetize? How can you look for signal and be able to convert that engagement into pipeline or product usage or renewal or whatever it is that you're trying to drive? So fundamentally, I'm doing the same thing I've been doing since 2013. But I think just a lot of the strategy is still true. It's still weirdly novel for some reason, whereas in the consumer world, they've long appreciated this. And the hope is with Audience Plus, we can help bring this to the masses and help other companies scale it.
And be able to do it with just one or two or five tools instead of 76.
Exactly. Hopefully, yeah, one and a half.
Yeah. So I'll just, before we really dive into it, I'll just acknowledge, you know, just something you said there toward the end, which is this idea of, you know, some people are slower to even be open to these ideas. I mean, part of what I was visualizing as you were describing it, and by the way, great job, like with that whole arc tying into like how it was so fundamental to the vision that you have now for Audience Plus and the fact that you went through all the hard struggles that you are but much better informed about what actually would be useful to build as opposed to speculating and hoping other people's imaginations would drive it. We actually lived it. But I started seeing essentially this very large top of funnel, like a different shape of funnel, this idea that we're going to essentially create this giant platform that people can hang out on it and interact. And some of them might choose to step into the funnel right from there.
Yeah.
And so when you walk that out, I think a lot of people are probably afraid of spending time and money. And I just want you to like punch up this myth or misperception. I think a lot of people are probably resistant to the idea of spending time and money on something that may or may not it turn into money for us, right? And so,
yeah,
you know, it's everything you just shared was completely intuitively true. And it was certainly true for Gainsight, which is lead with value, co-create with people, be meaningful in their lives and in their business, and they will reward you. But somehow that requires a leap of faith, because it's not just, you know, put the thing in front, see how many people click or jump in or do the thing.
Yeah.
And then next step, next step, next step. Look, 22%, 40%, 16%, 5%, money in, money out. Yeah. Like it's more nuanced. Or actually, I'll let you describe that. So beat up that myth or misperception that money that isn't directly related to producing an obvious immediate outcome is not efficient or useful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there's a couple ways to look at it. First, what is the alternative? The alternative is pumping it in AdWords and hoping for the best. I'd look at, you know, we probably look at the leading indicators there and say, hey, this is actually a highly converting channel for us because we've fine-tuned that landing page around getting people to be tricked into clicking it and giving us their email address. And by that, yeah, sure, that's great. But then I would encourage folks to look at the lifetime value of those deals and say, okay, did they actually become customers? You know, what was sort of the long tail effect of some of that stuff? So we have the immediate kind of dopamine hit of saying, oh, wow, I can just put $10 in and get $100 out. This is amazing. But that $100 isn't likely showing up in ARR kind of in your business long term. So that's one bit. But I think more importantly, the reason people have this fear perhaps of investing in brand and content and some of these more kind of arts and crafts side of marketing, maybe I've heard it referred to as, is probably because what they've done is they've relied on rented channels for distribution. And so they've said, we did a bunch of stuff, we put it on YouTube and I got nothing. Or I put it on Apple Podcasts, and it's really hard to know kind of if any of that ever turned into anything. Or, you know, SEO takes time. And so we need years of building our domain authority on search in order to know if any of the stuff's going to work. And all of that's true. It just takes a while to do things in rented channels because you need to rely on an algorithm that you don't control. When you have an owned media approach, which is novel here relative to some at least in B2B, relative to some of these other channels, you get real-time engagement data immediately. So imagine a world, imagine somebody is using Audience Plus, for example, on their website, and a target account engages with a piece of content on your blog and they listen to a podcast episode or they watch a video and they might see some recommended content based on their consumption or their firmographic data. They're moving through the funnel and you have access to that data instantly. It doesn't have to be this sort of long game. Now, they may or may not be in market. And I think there's somewhat of a, you know, for some companies, they're going to be ready to engage with an SDR right away. For other companies, they want to kind of move through the process and kind of better understand it, forward more of your stuff to the decision makers on their team or what have you. But I think that what you get instead is you're not chasing that dopamine effect, but you're getting a fairly quick pulse on the heart of your audience and how and what subsets of your audience should you be focusing on to drive impact. So that's a long way of saying, I think that the sort of the reason it might feel like a departure from the revenue machine is because we're relying on other people in order to get the distribution that we need. But when we rely on ourselves and our own relationships with our audience, we can get a much faster feedback loop and a much faster kind of signal for potential kind of business, you know, commercialization, I guess, of that relationship than we would in the traditional sense.
Very good. Give us the dumbed down version of, because you've used this language, I just want everyone to be clear because it's so fundamentally important, rented versus owned versus monetized. Yeah. Like just kind of walk through those pieces and maybe throw in a couple of examples.
Yeah. Well, this is a lot of consumer language. It's new to me too. But in understanding how the consumer media industry has perceived of building an audience funnel, they talk about it through this lens of rented, owned, and monetized. Rented is effectively saying we're relying on a third party in order to get distribution of any piece of content or message or what have you. And that could be social media like LinkedIn or Twitter. And obviously we're kind of beholden to their algorithms to get any reach, any organic reach within that audience. It could be content networks like YouTube or Spotify or Apple Podcasts, where again, we'll, you know, based on engagement and a number of other factors, we'll show up in certain places and we won't show up in other places. And then you've got SEO with Google, where we have to play to the algorithm. We have to, you know, I think a lot of the dark side of content marketing over the years, we've written content for an algorithm. We haven't written it for a human. because we're trying to rank and drive qualified traffic to the site and play the HubSpot kind of inbound marketing game. It's worked again for a long time. And so rented is sort of the top of funnel for a audience funnel for consumer media companies. The difference between B2B and these folks is that the intent for us is to be where our audience is in those channels. It's not saying we're not doing Spotify or YouTube or anything along those lines. No, we have to be there. But our reason for being there is to drive eyeballs and ultimately conversion into our owned audience. And that could come in the shape of maybe a show just like this on Spotify or YouTube and these other places, and an ad unit that we put in for a exclusive piece of content or an exclusive experience just for subscribers, and head over to our own owned media property to get access to that information, right? Finding ways to deplatform our audience from these quote rented channels into our owned audience. And what folks in consumer media have done for years is they've used that owned database to monetize through typically premium subscriptions or maybe events or courses in the creator world. And that's all great. I think we should do many of those things too. But I think traditionally for at least software companies, you're selling a product. And so it's licenses of your software. And so in between the owned and the monetized is engagement and trying to understand, okay, so we're not going to, we're going to look for the most highly engaged members of our audience who are going to be potential good fits to be a customer. And we need to sort of like fine tune that sort of, understanding, I guess, of engagement, which is going to be different for each and every company. So that's the model. And when my eyes really opened up as I thought about that, because it completely changes how we go to market, because it's not just like social isn't this like community manager that's, great, but 24 years old, fresh out of school, reporting somewhere in corporate marketing, retweeting our blog posts, like not to diminish that. But it's actually like fundamentally a very strategic role that is at the heart of our content distribution strategy. And so it's been great. And we've been in market now for 8 months or so with sort of running our SaaS company like a consumer media company. And it's been awesome to see just the different tactics and the different strategies and how they've shown up in our own kind of business metrics too.
Any particular surprises or validations or anything you want to share about that 8 month period, like relative to your expectations?
Yeah. I don't want to make a lot of enemies at social media platforms, but it's really interesting that to learn that these algorithms are like not our friend, actually. Like they're not trying to help us achieve our business goals. In fact, they're working against it. And so you've been on LinkedIn at all, when you see people writing like a post that has like one line in each sentence and like a line break and no links. And then they follow up in the comments like an hour later, like we're hacking an algorithm to try to get reach. And so when I, like just this morning, I posted the most just genuine, like we're doing a value added experience for CMOs. It's free, value added to LinkedIn community. Go on and check this out. But because I included a link, I got a few hundred impressions, where if I posted something very similar at the same time and didn't include the link, I probably could have gotten a few thousand. And so to me, it was like, I knew this was sort of the case, that there's, these are ad platforms at the end of the day. They want to keep you on property. But I didn't realize just how aggressive they were against our giving us the reach and the impressions that we needed. So again, this I'm not trying to lead an exodus away from social media. I just think that our relationship with them has to change, and we as brands have to sort of reclaim a little bit of control here.
Yeah, I love it. It's you need to get just enough value organically that you don't leave the platform, but you can't get too much because we need to, monetize you.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, like, unless you are a media company, of course, we're selling a product. Like, we're selling something, right, as marketers. And so, yeah, we have to, at some point, find the best way to get our job done. And I think this is a way to do it that's really, again, impactful, but also feels good, because you are actually leading with value and leading with a more relational context than you otherwise would.
Yeah. So I feel like you've taken a patient, thoughtful approach to going to market. leaning into your existing relationships, probably validating some of your initial ideas, bringing people together to inform some of the direction you want to go. And you are, I think, within 24 hours of release of this, unless plans change, but certainly within this immediate window, finally going to market with a product that people can sign a contract for. Talk a little bit about that approach. I mean, I gave it a little bit of characteristic from the outside, or I characterized it a little bit from the outside. So talk a little bit about that, and then talk a little bit about why that made sense for you all. And then certainly just jump into like, of the core ideas you've shared here of problems and opportunities, talk about what you are actually enabling through this first iteration of the product.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm a first-time founder. I'm a marketer by trade. And so a lot of this was sort of acting on first principles a little bit. And what we've sort of decided about, gosh, I think the company was about 6 months old at this point. Not that we're that much older now, but that we had an opportunity to start distributing our own content using our own product back in October. And by doing so, we would do several things. One, we would gain a lot of empathy for the customer, which has happened. It happens every day. Two, help shape a lot of our own feature prioritization for what we would build, because we'd be doing the thing and we have to like, oh, we can't, we're hacking this backend thing together using HubSpot. We need like this feature or whatever. And so that helped drive a lot of our priorities. And then third, maybe taking a little bit from the Gainsight playbook as well, we're educating the market around this new idea, or not new, but sort of a revamped kind of understanding of owned media, and getting real feedback of back that was shaping our own messaging. And so we didn't sort of know it at the time, but by doing that, by launching the media company before we launched the product, we were able to build a better product and a better company as a result. And so we've been in market for about, I guess now about 6 months or so, 7 months, no, 8 months or so with our media brand and building our own audience along the way. So sort of like drinking our own champagne, right, from that perspective. And so, you know, several thousand subscribers now of Audience Plus, which is really, really exciting. And we're doing things like a newsletter every week, you know, virtual events every month, new written content, written and video content every single week as well. And a team of two marketers effectively, plus me part-time, kind of doing all of that. So it's been awesome from that perspective. But, you know, I don't know how else you really start a company other than something like this. Just, you know, you're getting real-time validation, kind of building in public. You're not overly concerned about competitors necessarily. We haven't revealed much about the product until now. But, you know, being able to kind of get some really great feedback has been really huge. Now, the product itself, it's launch week for us, and so we're super excited about it. But effectively, like, you know, what I've experienced as a marketer is the place that a brand and an audience meets is typically your blog. That's really like the place where content is exchanged and education kind of happens online. And the blog has not evolved since the birth of the blog. It's still the same written content built in a CMS with web analytics data that helps you understand how many impressions each post got, that sort of thing. And so what we've built is sort of like supercharging the blog to the power of machine learning. And we're calling it an owned media platform. And effectively, you can do three things with it. One, you can actually launch a media site. So think of this as like a blog or a front end for your thought leadership that is built for video and podcasts and live events and blog posts. You can host exclusive content just for subscribers. You can start building a list of subscribers that is, you know, rooted in first party data that you now own kind of as a brand. And so that's sort of the first component. Second is you can use that data to understand what cohorts of your audience are engaging with what topics, what formats, what, you know, what do they care about? And that helps inform more and better content road mapping and content production. And then you can use that engagement data to understand kind of outcomes, which is the third component. So integrating with something like a Salesforce and saying, okay, is our podcast program actually driving pipeline creation or revenue attainment or product adoption or what have you? And so those are sort of the three components. And underneath it all is this powerful kind of machine learning capability where we're effectively building a machine learning model, like an OpenAI or an LLM for your company, where we're understanding content performance, audience engagement, we're understanding outcomes, and we're sort of building that into a model that you can then deploy to do a lot of really interesting things that we're going to be talking more about over the next several weeks. But think about that from like a recommendation engine for content, similar to like what a Netflix gives you on the independent kind of user level, being able to generate you know, metadata, titles, descriptions by just consuming transcripts, but not just the OpenAI version, but you doing all that generation rooted in the context of your customer or your audience down to the individual level. And many more things on the machine learning side that we're excited about. But I think the piece that's particularly exciting is that this isn't something that we're going to own. We're going to give you the keys to your model and have it be something that you can train, that you can develop without needing to be a data scientist or an AI engineer or anything along those lines. So super excited about what machine learning can unlock for marketers beyond just the generative stuff, which is really great and fun and honestly pretty helpful in some use cases, but actually to reverse engineer what success can look like on the business performance side and how can you build those programs from a content perspective to help kind of drive them.
Really good, really exciting. Question from the fear-based side of my mind. Sometimes it's dominant. You know, if someone's listening, like, this sounds super interesting. I actually am, now that you've made it explicit and explained it for me, Anthony, I see that I'm heavily reliant on paid media and other people's algorithms. I am producing a moderate amount of content. Like, what is a necessary or appropriate volume to really start? Because obviously the machine needs to learn on something. So there needs to be some volume of content and audience and whatever. Like, what stage of media company is a good level to really start getting at least some basic value out of platforming it this way?
Yeah. Well, I think there's various sort of use cases of Audience Plus. Some people use us just because they want to host a video on their website or podcasts or have this notion of an exclusive piece of content and their current kind of Webflow instance won't give that to them, right? And so there is sort of like the crawl, walk, run here. The other bit I'll say is we produce more media than we think we do. Webinars are effectively exclusive streams to your audience, right? But we're just, you know, we're gating that experience and calling it something else, virtual kind of events, virtual programs. So I think, you know, surely even a small team is starting to build some of these demand kind of creation programs that are maybe not referred to traditionally as media, but they sort of are accomplishing the same output. And so I think that through that lens, yes, I think a traditional machine learning model, if you want to use like Audience Plus at scale and in the way it's intended, the more data, the more audience engagement, the better. But I mean, we've built an audience of several thousand now direct subscribers with a team of two, you know, over 8 months of work. And so I think folks who are committed to content in sort of this new and modern way, who care about audience building and sort of believe that's the future, I think you could do a lot of damage with a small team. And what's cool about the program is, or the way we built the platform is, the data collector will run from day one. And so you may not need to unlock like this massive sort of, you know, machine learning kind of value right away. You can start by just like getting your one podcast or your webinar archive or your blog posts or whatever into the right place. And we'll already be starting to build that model for the individual kind of customer from the jump.
Really good. That's a good breakdown. I mean, it's a little bit TBD, but I'm sure you have an ideal customer profile of some kind in mind. You know, are there particular types of people that you think you could be most valuable to?
Yeah. And I think it's sort of like behind the question that you asked. I think that if we're going to, you know, we're a very young company. And so we think about like where we very, very much focus in our sweet spot. It is sort of the, call it the mid-market to early enterprise software businesses. People that have deep belief in content and media and a team likely that's producing a lot of content on their behalf. They have a community or they care deeply about building a community. And sort of they've seen the fruits of that investment and want to double down. And so that I would say is the sort of middle of the bullseye kind of for us. But again, there's folks on either side of that. The early stage folks that are, hey, we're starting to build our audience and we want to do it with media and we don't want to just have to move everything over from a CMS and do a CMS migration kind of down the line. Let's start from Audience Plus and build it from the ground up. And so I think that there's, you know, we'll hopefully have a solution for everyone one day. I don't know if that's a popular thing to say as a CEO, but that would be our ambition at least. But certainly I would say the folks that are right down the middle are, you know, call it 50 to 200 million of ARR software businesses who have content teams, community, and care deeply about using all of that as a funnel for growth.
Yeah, I love it. I think just to kind of tie that with your previous response too, I think one of the most exciting things about it, I mean, we're not there. The team that I've been on is not quite there, but I can see, I can imagine a lot of benefit there. And really a lot of it is, and this is just for content marketers or content creators in general, just being able to plug it into your system of record, own that data first party and tie it to the actual revenue outcomes, I think is something that's been missing and needed for a long time. And I know you felt the acute pain of that, because I'm sure some of the 76 tools you stacked up there were related to that at some level.
Exactly. Hacking it together, trying to de-anonymize a blog visitor and, you know, all of this stuff. So look, that's all good. I mean, I think that we had to do all of that and we're still doing it today. You know, hopefully Audience Plus over time can help change some of that, create sort of that opt-in relationship. You know, one tactic or one data point I think that's sort of proves that point is in the previous world and the world that, again, many of us I think are still in to some extent, your average conversion rate for at least a B2B software company is something like 1%, 1.5%. And that's because we're driving people to a get started or demo request form or something to that end. Consumer media sees a 10% conversion rate off of their digital program. So almost a 10x improvement. A lot of that's coming because they're leading with value, subscription, like not, don't buy something, like follow along, like sign up to be educated, to belong and to join this kind of movement that we're on. And so I'm not suggesting you should kill all your CTAs on your website and just make it all about that. But I think there's something there that we need to consider that, you know, we've hacked together a bunch of things to try to go from 1% to 1.5% transactionally. And I think that's good. I think there's a much bigger opportunity for us if we led with relationship and value from the get-go.
Yeah, really good. It reminds me of I'm going to butcher it, so I'm going to call it a paraphrase, not a quote, but Matthew Sweezy, who's been on Marketing Futurist, formerly of Salesforce, founded their like Web3 studio.
Cool.
One of his fundamental questions was, essentially, we need to stop asking why our marketing isn't performing better and instead just ask why it's not working. Right. And this is this idea of like, we can go small and be incremental around it, or we could actually ask the question in a very fundamental way. And I think you've spoken to a fundamental change that needs to happen for more and more companies in the near future, which is to go back to your initial response, a feeling orientation, acknowledging the fact that different people are on different journeys, that it isn't a linear path at all. And some people are going to raise their hands at different points. And if we use the right tools, we can start to understand when and why and how that happens in a patterned way so that we can be more available to people, perhaps, you know, right at that moment where they would potentially raise their hand if it was, you know, enough of a priority in the moment or enough of a felt need at the moment.
Yeah.
But the fact that we can, through learning and patterning, they don't even have to raise their hand and they already love us.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. It's that easy.
Yeah, it is just that easy. Yeah. Anyway, I appreciate you spending time with me. I appreciate you lining this up with Launch Week. I hope the launch is fantastic.
Thank you.
And of course, more importantly, sustained growth and service and value over time. For folks that have enjoyed this nearly 50 minutes with Anthony, as I have, I've got two more episodes I know you'll enjoy. One is with our mutual friend, James Carberry.
Oh, yeah.
That was episode 61 of this podcast, Instantly Creating Connection with Anyone You Want to Know. And it really is to the spirit of this conversation from the intro to the close of winning through relationships. That's episode 61 with James Carberry. And then a little bit on the heels of that one, episode 84 with Sangram Vajray, we called that one 10 Rules for Building a Category and a Community. Yeah. It's a really methodical breakdown of his learning, just as you were kind enough to take your learning at Gainsight in the building the customer success category and kind of how that informs what you're doing now. In that episode in particular, Sangram broke down some key elements that he did somewhat in parallel with you all in building the ABM category at Terminus. So that's episode 84 with Sangram, episode 61 with James. Before I let you go, Anthony, some standard questions that have been a pleasure to ask to over 250 people now. And I'll start with my favorite, which is, someone who has had a positive impact on your life or career, can you give that person a shout out?
Yeah. So I'll shout out Nick Mehta. He was my CEO at Gainsight. He took a chance on a 24-year-old guy who never marketed before to commit. And literally, I was a product guy basically before this, to commit and lead marketing for the company that became Gainsight. He's since become a mentor and a friend, now a board member at Audience Plus, announcing that this week as well. So He's been instrumental to my career in life. A lot of what I've learned, I never thought I could be a CEO because Nick was the bar for what great looked like. And I was like, I know it can't be Nick. I still know it can't be Nick, but he has inspired me to reach for that bar and try to model a lot of what I've learned from him by osmosis and directly in now building Audience Plus.
That's awesome. And just a little theme there of taking a chance or seeing something in you that you didn't see in yourself is just, if we can give that gift to anyone in our lives, it's amazing. And then of course, to be able to model great leadership is another thing too. How about a company or a brand that delivers a great experience for you? Anyone come to mind?
You know, I've just been on this run of bad experiences of late. And so I had a couple of good ones. And then I was like, oh man, but lately things have gone bad. You know what? I'll give one of the name everyone's heard of. Weirdly enough, American Airlines. I don't know if folks have had a bad experience with that. I've had such a good experience with American Airlines right here recently. I've converted from Southwest, which is also a great company, but actually seeing a lot of proactivity with American that I really appreciated. And what we didn't talk enough about was the digital CS, the digital CX. And I think American has done a really good job of like scaling their customer experience through digital means, which has been really helpful. But the one that I really like to give that is my model for everything that I want to do in my life is the local coffee shop here in Phoenix, Le Grand Orange. And just the fact that they know your coffee order. And I don't know what kind of superhumans these people are, but like they remember your order. And I find there's no better joy in the morning, you know, sleepy, walking into a coffee bar than somebody knowing your name and knowing what you want from a coffee perspective. So I'll give it up to LGO.
Nice. Well done. And it goes a long way to make someone feel seen and appreciated. And there are opportunities to do that more often than we think. Anthony, yeah. This has been fantastic. I really enjoyed the conversation. Again, continued success to you and your team. I'm excited to learn more. I actually probably need to have a specific conversation with someone over there soonish. And for anyone else who has enjoyed this, where can they learn more about you and or about Audience Plus?
Yeah, best place is audienceplus.com. If you subscribe there, you know, you'll hear it directly from us, all the content that we're producing around this topic. And then of course, I'm on LinkedIn, primarily Twitter, just under Anthony Canada.
Cool. I'll link all that stuff up. It should be in your podcast player as you're listening. It's right down below linked up. And of course, we write all these up at bombbomb.com/podcast. Thank you for listening. And Anthony, thank you again so much for your time.
Thanks so much, Ethan. Appreciate it.
Every single day, you're entrusting some of your most important and most valuable messages to plain black text on a plain white screen, to faceless typed out text. It doesn't differentiate you. It doesn't build trust and rapport, and it doesn't convey feelings, thoughts, arguments, ideas, or details nearly as well as you do. As a result, your customer experience, employee experience, and business outcomes suffer. So it's time to put you back into your digital communication. It's time to restore human connection across the digital divide with BombBomb Video Messages. They have the clarity and richness of in-person meetings and video calls, and the convenience of asynchronous emails, text messages, LinkedIn messages, and Slack messages. For clearer communication, human connection, and higher conversion, try BombBomb. Record, screen record, send, and track videos in Gmail, Outlook, LinkedIn, Salesforce, Outreach, Zendesk, iPhone, Android, and beyond. Try BombBomb absolutely free or learn how it works for your team or your entire company. Check it out at bombbomb.com.
Thanks for listening to the Customer Experience Podcast. Remember, the single most important thing you can do today is to create and deliver a better experience for your customers. Continue learning the latest strategies and tactics by subscribing right now in your favorite podcast player or visit bombbomb.com/podcast.